This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll hear about a plan in Chico to help businesses qualify for emergency disaster loans. We'll also hear from Deborah Moore, who is the managing editor of PlumasNews.com, about the impacts of COVID-19 in Plumas County, which relies heavily on tourism but wants to keep its case numbers down. And we'll learn about mental health resources available in Shasta County during this pandemic. If you have questions or comments for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Tuesday, June 16th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. California's death toll from the COVID-19 outbreak has exceeded 5,000, and the number of cases is now more than 150,000. According to data released Monday, 5,089 Californians had died from the virus, including 436 during the prior 7 days. Meanwhile, the number of cases rose by nearly 2,600, reaching 151,452. A recent uptick in coronavirus infections in the North State has pushed the 11-county region's caseload sharply higher to 363. The vast majority of infections are in largely valley counties, while some sparsely populated mountain counties still report caseloads in the single digits. As of Tuesday afternoon, Sutter County was reporting 89 cases, Butte County was reporting 88 cases, Shasta County reporting 51, Yuba County reports 37, Glenn County reporting 32, Tehama County 28, Siskiyou County 19, Colusa County 7, Lassen and Plumas Counties 5 each, and Trinity County 2. At least 9 North State residents are hospitalized with COVID-19. A total of 10 people in the region have died from it. Tuesday marked Butte County Public Health Officer Dr. Andy Miller's final day on the job. According to the Public Health Department, Miller needed to move up his departure from a previously announced resignation date of July 10th. Dr. Miller told NSPR that his exit has come earlier because of urgent family needs. The Public Health Department says work securing an interim public health director has been underway. In other news, more than a year and a half after the campfire, attorneys for Pacific Gas and Electric Company pleaded guilty to 85 felonies on behalf of the utility for causing the campfire. In an exhaustive report, Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey faulted the company's inspections and maintenance, record-keeping, culture, and lackadaisical attitude to risk. Ramsey noted that PG&E acquired the Caribou-Palermo transmission line, the line that failed in a 1930 merger, and established that little maintenance was done since. In a prepared statement, retiring PG&E CEO Bill Johnson, who was brought on after the campfire, made a public apology before the court.
PG&E will never forget the campfire and all that took from the region. We remain deeply, deeply sorry for this event and the tragic consequences.
Johnson said the company's bankruptcy reorganization plan should be approved by the end of the month, clearing the way for survivors to receive financial compensation. The criminal trial continues Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, with victim impact statements at 9 a.m. each day at the new Butte County Superior Court in Chico. Sentencing in the case is expected Friday. Due to the pandemic, few seats are available. However, proceedings will be streamed at buttecourt.ca.gov. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. More and more businesses are turning their lights back on as we move further into stage 3 of reopening throughout the North State. But months of having to have their doors closed has been difficult, if not crushing, for many. To help businesses in Chico, the city is finalizing a plan to set aside about $400,000 to assist more businesses to qualify for emergency disaster loans through 3CORE, a nonprofit economic development corporation serving the area. NSPR's Andre Bayek recently spoke with Chico Assistant City Manager Chris Constantine about the plan and about the businesses affected by the coronavirus pandemic that could be helped. The first thing Andre asked was for Constantine to take him through the proposal.
Well, one of our partners, 3CORE, our region's community development bank, has a $3 million emergency disaster loan that they're able to offer, a loan program that they're able to offer to businesses. There are criteria with that program, just like there is anything else through the Small Business Administration. And what we're doing as a city is dovetailing off that program and allowing for that criteria to be lowered to increase the number of businesses that could participate in the entire disaster loan program.
I believe there have been discussions about businesses that just couldn't take advantage of the Three Core program as it exists. How can this proposal help those businesses?
Well, in some cases, applying for programs such as these and the credit evaluation that occurs would be similar to what you face when you go to a bank, a commercial bank, where they ask you for your financials, the assets that you may have and whatnot, and they go through a process to determine what level of credit risk you may be. In the case of some of our businesses, downtown and other places, they may be a newer business. They may be a business that doesn't necessarily have the amount of assets that a bank would be looking for. They may not have a 600, 700, 800 credit score, but could be a reasonably good credit risk for us to assist. It is that type of business that we're looking for, one that we know we believe that they could fully repay the loan, ensuring that we don't end up anywhere in the city with, you know, vacant block full of businesses.
This program that you're describing, is it separate from, let's say, the PPP loan program that was created through the CARES Act, or could they be complementary to each other?
This is intended to be a gap loan where a business may not qualify for the EIDL and then the PPP or receive a commercial loan from their institution or any other source. This is intended to really be somewhat of a last resort. If you're not getting it anywhere else, we'll take a look at it and see if we can make it work. And that is to say there is no guarantee that a business would qualify even for that type of last resort loan. So we need to caveat that. This isn't a program where if you don't qualify anywhere else, you can qualify here.
And is there a typical loan amount that's offered or granted through this program?
The program through Three Core is a $10,000 plus type of loan, and we would have to evaluate, depending on what the need is, to what extent we could grant that loan and the dollar amount that goes with it. We have to understand that we don't have an unlimited amount of money, and so trying to maximize where the money can be most effective is a balancing act between the dollar amounts, the credit risk, and the business impacted.
And what's the overall goal here? Is it to basically get more money in the hands of business owners to weather the pandemic?
While we're looking at citywide, we understand that certain businesses are going to see the effect of a double whammy with the university changing its schedule. One of our primary focuses is ensuring we can provide a bridge for those businesses that were both impacted by the pandemic and then by the reduced operations here in the downtown area with the university so that we can get them through to the next semester when activity starts to come back and they can self-sustain themselves.
And how will businesses be able to take advantage of this program?
So the application process will be similar to what it is currently. They would be applying through the CDFI, the Community Development Financial Institution, Three Core. They would go to their website and see what the application process is and what's required and then go through that.
Can you take me through what's at stake for the city regarding possibly its potential exposure or obligations here?
Certainly. Currently, the program, when it offers a loan, has other partners and programs, whether state, federal, or private, that backstop that loan. For example, I issue a $10,000 loan for somebody with a reasonably high credit score and asset, and I may find a state program that's willing to secure that loan at 95%, which means if that business fully defaulted on all $10,000 of that loan, that state program would cover $9,500 of that. The remaining $500 would be a risk exposure of our community development financial institutions program that they would have to set aside money in their accounts to ensure that if they default, they can pay for that. When we go to a higher risk type of business, that security may be 80%, 50%, or even zero, in which case our community development financial institution cannot take that risk and expose to itself to such a large loss. And that would be where the city would step in and determine whether or not it wants to secure that loan or portion of that loan to allow it to meet the thresholds that it could be granted that overall loan through our community development financial institution.
Is there anything that people should know about this program and the city's involvement that perhaps I didn't touch on yet or that you'd like to clarify?
I think I want to emphasize that this program actually exists. We referred a number of businesses to this program, but for some reason, in some cases, businesses did not reach out to 3Corps to be able to evaluate and consider applying for those programs. So what we're hoping is through this radio station and other news outlets and some marketing, we can get an understanding of what the program is and how to apply out to businesses to ensure that they're able to apply if they so choose.
That was Chris Constantine, Assistant City Manager for Chico, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. As mentioned last week, our news team has partnered with CAP Radio on the Rural Reporting Project, where right now we're focusing on how the pandemic is affecting Plumas and Sierra counties. The top concern we've found from residents there is that tourists vacationing for the summer might bring COVID with them. To learn more, CAP Radio's Randall White recently spoke with Deborah Moore, the managing editor for PlumasNews.com. The website is the overarching organization behind four local papers throughout the Plumas County area that stopped printing on April 8th, but are still publishing online. The first thing Randall asked was what sort of sense Moore is getting about whether people who live in these rural Sierra counties want the tourist season to restart.
I think it's probably like it is elsewhere in California. There's mixed feelings. We are a heavily tourist-based economy, and many of our businesses, of course, make their money during these summer months and really need the influx of visitors. But we also know that with the influx of visitors comes the potential of a spread of the virus, which nobody here wants because we have three small rural hospitals to serve our county.
Right. And if those hospitals get filled up because tourists are there, then there's no rooms available for the locals should COVID peak again.
Correct. So I think that each of our hospitals, as I recall, has two ICU beds that would be available with ventilators. Realistically, anybody that needed that sort of attention would probably be taken elsewhere, depending on availability. Mm-hmm. You know, we've held steady with four confirmed cases since early April and then just received our fifth confirmed case.
And this is throughout all of Plumas County?
All of Plumas County, population about 18,000.
Mm-hmm. And we are starting to see cases rise in areas where there hadn't been many cases. Calaveras County has seen quite a few cases in recent weeks. What is the main concern there? Are people worried that there's going to be a second wave and maybe Plumas County could get harder this second time around?
I think that's the concern. And then, of course, everything's just reopened. And we know that if there are an increase in cases, then we could be forced to take some steps back. We are lucky here in that it's a sparsely populated area, so we have lots of room, and most of our attractions are outdoors, so people can get out and recreate with proper social distancing. I think more of the concern is when people come inside and go to the restaurants or the stores, that everybody takes the proper precautions. And like elsewhere, it seems some people take it seriously and some people don't.
And some of the feedback that we've gotten is that many people see this pandemic as absolutely crippling to the Plumas County economy. And I imagine through your reporting, you're seeing plenty of that as well.
It's interesting because it's sort of by sector. Right now, the restaurants are seeing a pretty good business. The tourists are coming back, and you actually have to make reservations. And so that area, I think, is doing well. Some of the retail is suffering. Of course, where I am, I'm working in this huge building pretty much by myself because back in April when we published our last newspaper, we had to lay off 73 people. So we would really like to see, of course, the strong economy come back, but safely.
That was Deborah Moore, the managing editor for PlumasNews.com, speaking with CAP Radio's Randall White. You can find a link to our collaborative rural reporting project with CAP Radio at mynspr.org. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. The continued uncertainty surrounding this pandemic has created continued anxiety for many, but there are resources to help. To learn about some of those resources in Shasta County, NSPR's Angel Hiracha recently spoke with Paige Green, Deputy Branch Director of Adult Services for the Shasta County Health and Human Services Agency. One of the first questions Angel asked was what's been happening with mental health services in the county since the coronavirus pandemic began.
We have been doing a lot of virtual things. Our psychiatrists, we already had a couple of psychiatrists that provided telepsychiatry for us that were in other parts of the country, but our on-site prescribers went home, and so they are also providing virtual services, as well as our therapists and our case managers and our drug and alcohol counselors. So that's been something different that has happened. So we've learned a lot since then, even just the setup as an agency of so many people just trying to get set up and prepared to work remotely and to provide those services remotely in such a short amount of time was interesting. So we're providing a lot of virtual and then telephonic services.
What we're experiencing with this pandemic is widely viewed as unprecedented. How have you been able to gauge how to approach the situation since we really haven't seen anything like this before?
You know, a lot of it has to do with communication. We have a very strong leadership team here in adult services. And so in adult services, we have adult protective services, in-home support services, public guardian, public authority, and then all the mental health programs for adults in Shasta County. So the leadership team of all of those programs, we met regularly, we meet regularly, we plan regularly, in addition to in HHSA, Health and Human Services Agency, meeting with the leadership to kind of just work through this together, because every day it seemed like it changed. You know, one day we're telling our staff, okay, we're doing this, and the next thing we're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that, now we're doing this. And we're not used to being inconsistent like that, so that was something to adapt to. But, you know, I think everybody was experiencing the same thing, that as things rolled out, things were changing as we were rolling them out. So that's what we kind of did. It was really about communication and making sure that we all knew what was happening and that we communicated that well to our employees as best we could. So that's kind of how we have made it through so far.
Have these events triggered an increase in adults seeking services online? What sort of things are people struggling with?
I don't know about online. We have had some of our clients who have challenges getting in to services really like the online services better. Some of them don't. Some people don't have access to that. So I wouldn't say that it increased. And in fact, all of our services really decreased pretty significantly in the very beginning. You know, we were not seeing clients showing up, even though we've been open and providing services throughout the entire pandemic. It really decreased a lot, and being able to reach people was challenging. And if we did, they didn't really want to engage. And so I think that kind of leads to what have we been experiencing is that the unknown has caused people, I think, to just pull in and not want to engage just because nobody knew what was happening and all the information that was coming out kept changing. And so that's what we saw. We saw an increase of people calling just to ask questions as opposed to calling in crisis. We had a reduction in crisis phone calls, but we had an increase in question phone calls. So that was something that we didn't anticipate. We thought we would see a lot more crisis type of calls. But what people are struggling with is the isolation, feeling isolated, feeling alone, feeling tired, having kids at home all the time, working at home, you know, when's it going to end, the anticipation, the fear that if you go out, something bad's going to happen to you. So a lot of anxiety is what we've seen with people. And again, because it's unknown, and then, you know, some say, oh, do it this way, wear masks, don't wear masks, you know. So it's just been such a interesting journey just trying to figure out how to help people, you know, to deal with their anxiety. And for people with mental illness, isolation usually is not in their best interest. And so we've seen, you know, some people become, you know, challenged and, you know, it challenging their mental health in that way, because we work really hard to help them to stay social. That's one of the interventions that works well And with this, it didn't really lend itself to supporting that.
For those looking, what adult services are currently being provided by the Shasta County Health and Human Services Agency?
Well, like I said, for the most part, most of our services across the agency continued, but maybe at a lesser or a different way. But at Adult Services, we have continued with our in-home support applications, you know, continuing to take applications. In mental health, they continued to see clients face-to-face. And we continue to do 5150 evaluations. We still do that. We're continuing to provide services, whether it's telephonic or face-to-face. Adult Protective Services continued to get, you know, allegations of abuse that they had to respond to. So they continue providing that, as well as with our public guardian continuing to make sure that clients are safe and taken care of. So most of our services have continued. Like I said, only at, it might be at a lesser amount.
From your perspective in the mental health world, what should the public know about the effects this pandemic is having on the local community?
Well, I think you can see some of it, you know, in the news. Again, it comes down to anxiety, and, you know, people become anxious when they don't know what's happening and, you know, when they're confused, and you get different opinions, so you're not sure who to trust or who to believe. And so, and when it's your health and the health of those you love, it's, you know, of course it's important, and they pay special attention to that. So for our community, I think what we are seeing is, you know, people wanting to get back to normal, but normal as we knew it isn't going to be. And so it's hard, again, to how do you imagine that? How do you move forward and develop a new normal when that looks different to everyone? And so it tends to increase agitation and decrease tolerance. And so hopefully, you know, our community continue to be kind to each other because no one knows. This is so new. This is so unprecedented. Like you said, they don't know what the answers are completely, what it'll look like. But we do know some things health, you know, wise that come out from, you know, our public health department that, you know, tell us about, you know, what we do know. So trying to take that information and applying it in a practical, mindful way is important, but it's hard because people have different opinions about what it should look like. So just knowing that, you know, everybody's trying to do the best they can, you know, assume positive intention. I don't think anybody is trying to take advantage or do something negative to anyone. And I think it does help, you know, for some of it, it's allowed us to do some, you know, spend more time together, and as a community, we're bonding over this disaster, which we know that overcoming adversity builds resilience. And so the fabulous thing about this is this is going to make us a more resilient community. Just like last year when we experienced the car fire, you know, this is different but the same, in that as a community, we're overcoming this, and we will overcome this, and we'll just continue to be more resilient as a result of it.
Now, as a journalist, my job consists of just reading news and being online for most of the day. So my life is consumed with COVID-19 news. It's probably not a good thing, but do you think the constant monitoring of news affects mental health? And do you have any recommendations for people like me who either work in the media or are just news junkies?
You know, I can't imagine your life being consumed by COVID, and because it's so long. I think as a journalist, my guess is that, you know, that's what you look at, are events, and then you get saturated by them, but they're usually short-term, and this one's so long. And so my worry for you, or for, you know, news junkies, is that saturation could have an effect on your mental health, for sure. And one of the things, if you weren't a journalist, I would be saying to people is reduce the amount of time you spend exposed to information, just because it does affect your mental health. There's so many different opinions, different suggestions, different, you know, science. One uses science to say this, one uses another. So I would say to you, make sure you take care of yourself, step away, and give yourself breaks for sure, because because it's not your reality. When you look at it, it is your reality, but when you step away, reminding yourself that there's another reality, and that's the other things, the relationships, your physical health, your emotional health, you know, your health and well-being, that is also a part of your reality, and you have to take care of that too. And so just making sure that you do that for yourself and for people who don't do journalism, you know, just trying to make sure that they get as much accurate information instead of listening to all the different suggestions and information. So make sure you take good care of yourself.
That was Paige Green, Deputy Branch Director of Adult Services for Shasta County Health and Human Services Agency, speaking with NSPR's Angel Hiracha. Before we head out, just a quick reminder that NSPR has put together a wide-ranging list of mental health resources that contains general advice if you're feeling stressed, anxious, or overwhelmed, hotlines you can call, and links to every county behavioral health department in our region. You can find it on our website, mynspr.org. And that is your program. As always, if you have thoughts for us, leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Hiracha, Eric Radaville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30, or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.